I know it's here somewhere. Finally. Oh, it's time for the doctor. You're listening to Dr. Bill, the computer curmudgeon. Take it away, doctor.
Well, it's that time again, and the doctor is in. It's time once again for Dr. Bill, the computer curmudgeon. And this week, we have stuff to talk about on the show. I would say as usual, but sometimes we don't have stuff that's really worth talking about. We have kind of okay stuff, but this week is not bad, you know, all things considered. So there you go. We are proud members of the Tech Podcast Network, techpodcast.com. If it's tech, it's right here on Dr. Bill, the computer curmudgeon. We are also proud members of the International Association of Internet Broadcasters. Yes. Now, I am a computer curmudgeon, and sometimes I get... I hit my microphone. I don't mean to hit my microphone. If you heard something go click, you know what it is. Anyway... I sometimes get a little ticked off at the computing world and at equipment and things of that nature. But it's because I'm a computer curmudgeon and I get to go, eh, like I said last week. Anyway, this week, though, we have something where everyone has an opportunity to be annoyed. And that is that the Pwn2Own event occurred again. Pwn2Own, as you may or may not know, is a bunch of hackers getting together at the behest of many companies, and basically the company's saying, go ahead, try to hack our browser. And of course, they were completely successful in hacking all of them this year. Now, one year they were able to hack all the browsers except Chrome, because of course it is the most secure browser, but even Chrome got hacked this year. So, man, what a good year for anybody in the browser community. Anyway, on March 19th, the second day of the Hewlett-Packard Zero Day Initiative, ZDI, sponsored Pwn2Own Hacking Challenge, at the CanSec West Conference in Vancouver, BC, British Columbia. That's in Canada. I know it's Canada, but I like to mispronounce it and point up because they're north of us. Yeah, I know. All you Canadians out there are going, arr. But you know, I know you're a good-hearted lot, so I know you won't shoot me. Anyway, by the way, I like some Canadian shows. One of my favorite shows from Canada, actually there are several that I really like, but one of them in particular is about an inspector that he uses relatively modern forensics to solve mysteries, usually murders. And you say, well, big deal, Dr. Bell. I mean, CSI's been doing it. Yes, but he's doing it back in the 1800s. You know? Which is kind of cool. I like that show. But anyway, I don't get to see it in real time. I get to see it much later. So I'm waiting for the current season to be the past season so I can actually see it. Inspector Murdoch. It's called the Murdoch Mysteries. I like it. Anyway, I'm totally digressing. The point is that HP awarded the researchers a total of $240,000 in prize money on the second day, bringing the two-day award total to $557,500. That's a lot of fives. Five. Anyway. On the first day of the Pwn2Own event, HP awarded $317,500 for the exploits against Adobe Flash, which you would figure Adobe would get hacked, Adobe Reader, Microsoft IE11, and Firefox. The second day saw no new Adobe exploits as researchers turned their attention back to the browsers, with new exploits reported against Firefox, IE Chrome, and Safari. Like I said, everybody went down. You know, no winners in that at all. But see, the good thing about this is, for us as users of computers and of browsers, is the more they find these problems, the more they can fix them. So once they find them and report them, then the company can go back and fix the browser. One would hope. Unless they're Microsoft. Then they don't fix it. They just go, oh, no, no, never mind. Look over there. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. Yes. Anyway, you know, Microsoft has Patch Tuesday every month. And they keep piling more and more patches because they just keep... Don't get me started on Microsoft. Bunch of twits. And I don't mean that in the Leo Laporte This Week in Tech type twit. Anyway, here's a security thing for you. Ugly Mail helps you track tracking those who would track you. You can track. Find out who they are. You probably never heard of companies like Yesware, Banana Tag. That's it. I was trying to read it so many different ways, I didn't realize it's just banana. Banana Tag. And Streak. They most certainly know a good deal about you. Excuse me. While I cough. I'm still getting over the problem I was having last week with my throat. And the dry air here in the studio is not helping. You say, Dr. Bill, why didn't you get water? Well, I forgot. Anyway. Email tracking. The way this works, the email tracking works, is that they put tiny little 1 pixel images in an HTML email. Then when you open it in HTML, it displays the pixel, usually an invisible pixel that you can't even see. But that allows them to track the fact that that pixel was displayed. Tricky. So what this particular Chrome extension does is it tracks the fact that they're trying to use this little pixel image to, track you. The reason it's easy to create this kind of tracking is it monitors itself in a simple procedure. Marketers or anyone that's inspired to snoop simply insert a transparent 1x1 pixel image into an email, which we just discussed. When that email is opened, the image pings the server it originated with information like the time, your location, and the device you're using. It's a read receipt on steroids that you never signed up for. Pixel tracking is a long-established practice. That's why I never open emails in HTML. I always open them text only, and I use email clients that block the images so they can't track me. There you go. There's nothing remotely illegal or even particularly discouraged about it. Google even has a support page dedicated to guiding advertisers through the process. Yeesh. This doesn't make it any less unsettling. Just see how closely your inbox activity is being monitored. Using Ugly Mail, which is that little plugin for Chrome, is as simple as the service is effective. Once you've installed it, the code identifies emails that include tracking pixels from any of the 3 services mentioned above. Those messages will appear in your inbox with an eye icon next to the subject heading, letting you know that once clicked, it will alert the sender. Tulgananov also confirmed to Wired that Ugly Mail also doesn't store, save, or transmit any data from your Gmail account or computer, and everything takes place on the user's end. Lest you think that maybe he's getting information while he's creating this plugin for Chrome. It's actually quite cool. So if you're paranoid about your email, then perhaps you want to get Ugly Mail. Ugly Mail. You know, it's for an extension name, that's a little... You know, the mail they're trying to stop is ugly, but anyway. Next item. A new Apple TV may be a reality soon. People have been talking about that new Apple TV for a long time. But it may actually come to pass. Now, I say here as I start this article, I still love my Roku, but this does sound intriguing. After all, I'm an Apple guy too. I actually am a Linux, Apple, PC virtualization guy. Wear a lot of hats. The moment I'm wearing this one. Yes. In CNET, Don Reisinger says, the Apple TV set-top streaming box will reportedly get an update later this year that could finally bring some long-awaited features to the device. Apple will unveil a new Apple TV box at its Worldwide Developers Conference, the WWDC, later this year. BuzzFeed is reporting, citing people who claim to have knowledge about the company's plans. The Apple TV announcement will come in tandem with the unveiling of a software development kit that will allow developers to bring apps to the set-top box, much like you can write Roku channels, I would hope. Maybe they'll do that for the Apple TV. The update will deliver an app store to the Apple TV, similar to the app store on iOS devices like the iPhone and the iPad. The Apple TV box has been on a strange odyssey since its debut in 2007. The original device was designed to bring iTunes content to a customer's television and was followed by subsequent versions that stripped away the need for onboard storage and focused solely on streaming content to the television. An updated Apple TV device hasn't appeared since 2012. The Apple TV box currently offers access to iTunes content as well as a host of apps ranging from YouTube to HBO Go. Owners can rent and buy movies and television shows from the device. So they're probably going to add many more features to this, which I'll be interested to see them announce. And I suspect they will provide all kinds of new tools for cord cutters, people who want to get off of cable and get all of their TV through the interwebs, which would be cool. All right, next item. Open Source Sirius takes on Siri. Get it? Yes. Move over, Siri. Now there's an open source alternative for Linux users. This is people using a Linux-based phone. Sirius is an open source virtual assistant, a bit like Apple Siri, pictured above in their article from PC World, which is not in my pasted article here because I just copied the text. Google's Google Now are Microsoft's Cortana. But unlike those well-known helpers and like Linux itself, Sirius is an open platform anyone can use and contribute to, from universities to startups. It's currently being tested on Ubuntu. I cut out all of the coughing that I have done because it was just too much. Sorry about that. I'm still not quite over it, but I'll do the best I can to finish this episode. So, Sirius is a personal assistant available for Ubuntu, and you can download it and put it on your Ubuntu-based phone. You can get the code because it is licensed under the BSD license, hosted on GitHub so that anyone can contribute and play with the code. And you'll also find a Sirius Suite download package. You should use this if you want to install it on your own Linux PC. So, there's a little bit of effort to get it because you do have to compile it. So it looks like it is available for Ubuntu. I'm not even entirely sure. I guess there are Ubuntu-based phones that are available. I know that Ubuntu tried to have a phone, but their Kickstarter did not go anywhere far enough with it, so they couldn't do that. But anyway, whoa, boy, I cough so much I'm actually tired. Hey, Fred. Fred decides to throw in a Geek Software of the Week. Drum roll, just as I'm trying to recover from all the coughing I was doing. Geek Software of the Week this week, boy, I coughed a lot, is Virtual Router, which is actually an open source product from, are you ready? Microsoft open source. What? Are we truly near the end of the world at this point? Microsoft. Anyway, they have a software, free open source software package that is an open source router written in C#, which, as you may or may not know, is a programming language, not music. Ta-da! Anyway, It's an open source based router for PCs running Windows 8, Windows 7, or Windows Server 2008 R2. Using Virtual Router, users can wirelessly share any internet connection, Wi-Fi, LAN, cable, modem, dial-up, cellular, etc. with any Wi-Fi device, which might be a laptop, smartphone, iPod, etc. These devices connect to Virtual Router just like any other access point, and the connection is completely secured with WPA2, the most secure wireless encryption available. So there you go. And now the final item for this week. I'm hoping my throat will hold out long enough. Is about the new MacBooks that came out. You know, the ones that use the USB-C to charge it and transfer data and all these other things. Well, they won't run Windows 7 in boot camp. Now, that's kind of a problem for people that are counting on boot camp to run Windows 7 on their new MacBook. Now, I personally use Parallels on my MacBook Pro, which is the old 17-inch model, rather than boot camp. But, dude, if you are a user of boot camp, you're probably not too thrilled about this. Just saying. So, anyway, Apple MacBook lovers, it says, likely won't be loving the latest news regarding the impending revamped 13-inch MacBook Pro or how it impacts MacBook Air. Apple is eliminating boot camp support for installing Windows 7 on the two laptops. Now, the good news is Windows 10 is coming out, and they are not saying they won't support Windows 10. They are not saying that they won't support Windows 10. They're also not saying that they're going to yet, because Windows 10 is not out, but, So anyway, Microsoft, by the way, has said, and I was going to actually put an article about this on the blog, and I completely forgot. Microsoft said it's going to provide free upgrades to Windows 7, 8, and 8.1 users when it launches Windows 10. Now, you heard that right. A free upgrade. And I've heard, now this is the part that's not totally clear, I've heard that even illegal Windows users will be able to upgrade once to Windows 10, but it still won't be legal. That's the tricky part. So now, if you own a real copy of Windows, let's say 7 or 8, and you upgrade to 10 with this free plan, it will be a legal copy. Do you see the difference? The idea, I think, is that Microsoft is wanting to get everybody to Windows 10 and get off the older platforms, which makes sense, particularly from a security point of view, okay? So that's cool, but this ties into the MacBook thing because boot camp probably will run Windows 10. You know, they just won't run Windows 7. After all, 7 is old. Sorry, but it's true. So there you go. Well, I tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to go find me a great big glass of water. I'm going to drink it to try to get my throat moisturified. Moisturified. Yes, yes, moisturized, I know, but just leave me alone. I'm grumpy because my throat's been giving me a hard time and I was coughing in the middle of the program. And I'm sorry about that. Remember until next time that the doctor is out of here. Bill, the computer curmudgeon, is a production of DrBillBailey.net with all the honors, rights, and privileges thereunto appertaining.